Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled. Hello and welcome to Mainstream by Pixel Sift. My name is Gianni, and joining me on this episode of Mainstream is Daniel Ang. Daniel Ang, what's happening with you?
Hey, what's up, Gianni? Not much. Just been playing some Last of Us recently, and other than that, just taking it easy. What about you?
Yeah, I've been checking out a brand new game called No Straight Rose, which if you listen to this episode right on PlayStation and on the PC. Now, if you've never listened to an episode of Mainstream before, or maybe you haven't come across what Pixel Sift does, we make our name delivering some of the best indie games coverage for GamesMan around in Australia and around the world. And on Mainstream, we talk about those high-profile blockbuster games that we've been playing recently. And you pretty much don't get much bigger than the high-profile blockbuster game of Last of Us Part 2. So, shall we jump in?
Let's do it.
Australia's best video game podcast.
Subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever podcasts are found.
Daniel, I've just landed on planet Earth. I've never heard of The Last of Us before. Can you tell me what is this game? Give us a brief overview of the setting and set us up to talk about The Last of Us Part 2.
Okay, let's go straight into it. So The Last of Us, the original game, came out back in 2013 and was developed by Naughty Dog. And the premise of the entire world goes something like this. So in the real world right now, there's this fungus or disease or parasite called the cordyceps. It's found in like South America. And basically the way that it works is that it's released by spores, and it goes into insects, and it starts to take over their brain and control them and do a bunch of really crazy, disgusting things. And the developers of the game have just asked, what if that jumped to humans? And what would that actually look like if it went into our society? So as far as a post-apocalyptic setting goes, it's very interesting because it's something pretty tangible. It's already existing in our real world, and it just takes it that next step further to ask, what would people be going through if this made the leap? And so in the first game, you play as a fellow named Joel, and it's set 20 years after the initial apocalypse. So the world has had time to, I wouldn't say adjust to the apocalypse, more like fall to the apocalypse, but people are still living and people are around different communities and everything's torn and destroyed. And because of that, the setting itself, just picture a city and picture what it would look like if all the upkeep for vegetation and all those kinds of things just didn't happen for 20 years. So if you've seen the film I Am Legend, for instance, there's a famous scene where Will Smith is walking through Times Square and there's just a giant, it's almost like a savanna. There's tall grass everywhere, trees, roots, that sort of thing. So I want you to picture that when you think of the world of The Last of Us.
It must be really interesting because when the first Last of Us game came out, the idea of a global pandemic was sort of a more of a hypothetical one. Maybe not for everyone who's listening in the world. People in places of Asia would have experienced SARS and things like that. But it is something that is happening right now in the world, and we're getting alerts. Like I saw one the other day saying that the US recorded 40,000 new COVID-19 cases in one day. Does it feel weird playing this game now in the moment that we're happen to find ourselves right in?
It is different. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there, because when I played the first game, I was just finishing up high school, because like I mentioned earlier, it came out in 2013, so it's been a while since then. And for it to go back into that world, you know, of Joel and Ellie and the clickers, which I'll get into later on when we talk about the game, For me, I can't really say I've been thinking about it too much, as in what's happening right now. It's just because when I'm pulled back into the story and in the world, I suppose there are elements like you know, you see infected people walking around, and you see especially like all the different quarantine zones and stuff. There are a few things where I'm like, okay, I'm seeing this on the news now, like obviously not to this extent, but it definitely has it's a weird, I wouldn't even say commentary, because they didn't know this was going to happen when they did the first game. Do you know what I'm saying? So they went back into it, and I suppose now with our new lens looking at it, I don't know. It is strange. I will say that.
I saw a sign in there that talked about using masks and making sure to wash your hands to control the spread of cordyceps. And I was like, man, I have seen that sign just walking around in the last, over the last couple of months. And it seems to be quite an eerie moment. For people who haven't played the game, what is the game? How does it actually play? What would you describe it as?
There's a couple of different main gameplay pillars, I would say. So there's the exploration, there's combat, and there's more of the story, I guess, sort of stuff, like little quests and everything that you can do. And the puzzle mechanics as well. It's actually a bigger part in the second game, which I was surprised to see. It was a good change from the first one. But essentially, it's a very story-driven game. So when you're playing The Last of Us, I'll talk about The Last of Us 2 now. You play as Ellie, and in the first game, Ellie and Joel had a very, that was the focus of the game, was their relationship. And now it asks the question 4 years later, Ellie's a little bit more grown up, and she's on this quest of vengeance to find a bunch of people that have wronged her and exact, revenge against them. And playing as Ellie compared to Joel in the first game, she's very, very different. So Joel can walk around and tank a lot of shots and just run up to people and beat their face in essentially with melee weapons and all that kind of stuff. But Ellie's a lot more stealthy. So there's a lot more stealth in this game, and they've included extra things that you can do that you couldn't as Joel. For example, because Ellie's physically smaller, she can squeeze through little gaps between doors, or if you're at a supermarket, for instance, shelves, you can crawl underneath them and you can go under cars and hide. And there's, different parts of the encounters that you have with either infected people or bandits. And it's a lot more using the environment in this game. Apart from that, the actual combat, when you're actually exploring and walking around and looking at all the different buildings and that sort of thing, there's a lot of, how do I want to say, there's like crafting elements to it. So you're scavenging, you're walking around, picking up ammo and looting things and putting together better weapons and that sort of stuff. And all of it is done really seamlessly because, again, like I mentioned, the story is the main focus here, and it always will be. And it moves you from area to area in a very seamless sort of way. And it's up to you, the player, to think, okay, do I want to continue down and go straight to the story? Or do I want to spend at least 5 or 10 minutes in this area and try and find better loot and maybe encounter a couple of hostile people along the way? But in The Last of Us 2, there are several new types of infected. One of them is called the Shambler, and another one's the Stalker. So the Shambler is, I'm only about, I think, 14 hours in the game, so I'm not sure if it's explained where they come from or whatever, but they release a bunch of spores and corrosive gas if you get too close to them. So it provides different opportunities in combat to think about things and how you want to actually tackle it. So you can't just run up to them and start beating them, with a baseball bat, because they're just going to launch gas at you everywhere. And they are really tough to take down as well. So I remember one time I got trapped in a basement and there were like two Shamblers in there, and I was feeling pretty confident. I just upgraded my skills and I was like, okay, I got a shotgun, I can do this. Yeah, you can't. It does not work that way. So usually for them, I just tend to avoid them completely, and that's totally an option. Sometimes it just means you won't be able to thoroughly loot an area which might have valuable gear, but that's the trade-off. It's like, do I want to spend resources to fight them so I can find other resources, or do I just get the hell out of Dodge? And that's really up to you. And the second type that I've encountered so far that's new to The Last of Us 2 is the Stalkers. So in the game, Gianni, there's this mechanic called the Listen mode. And if you hold down R1, Ellie will kind of look down and start to listen to things in the world. And it's kind of like a detective vision in Batman Arkham Asylum, for instance. So you kind of get an idea about where the enemies are. And in the game, it's represented by like this white sort of mark through walls. So you know that somebody is on the other side, or maybe above you if you're in a house, for instance. And the stalkers don't work like that. So you actually can't hear them. And all up to this point in the game, I'm like relying on listen mode so much because it's, you know, I can see enemy paths roughly where they are and stuff. And the stalkers are so creepy because they seem more intelligent and they know where you are and they kind of like, well, they stalk you, right? So they poke their head out around a corner and they see you and then they just scurry away and like call three of their friends and they'll come back and just watch you. And then once you get past a certain point, they'll jump out and all start attacking you. So you have to be really aware of your surroundings at all times during the game. And I think that's why the environments and the combat and everything mixed together just works so well.
It's interesting because when you think about the previous game, you could take your time, you could puzzle it out like a puzzle game, and you can spend as much time as it to set yourself up for the perfect positioning. But it sort of sounds like there's sort of elements there that means that you are just forced out of that really strong positioning in order to move through the game.
100%. And sometimes too, like a new enemy type is dogs, like just hound dogs that will try and sniff you out. And when you use the listen mode again, you can kind of see that they've got your scent and you have to lose them and go into grass or run away. And so I think it's really provides interesting opportunities because it's not just all stealth all the time. Sometimes if you get spotted, for instance, the game's not over. Like you have to adapt to it. And I really love that because sometimes, you know, you'll be crawling through like thick reeds and somebody will be like, over here, she's over here. And you'll pop up and like ditch a brick at them and just start running and squeeze. Just hide and then they'll lose you again. And I love that fast paced moment when you're like, oh crap, am I going to make it? And you just run and you really feel like in that situation, you know, like what would you do? And doing that improvisational sort of gameplay to it and think, okay, I've got these weapons, I've got these skills, I can put them all together and just do something. It really works.
I think one of the things that this game does really well in the previous one as well is because it's like a third person action game. There's sort of like climbing and sort of platforming elements to it as well. And a lot of it is sort of navigating through a big space. There's lots of storytelling that just happens in the world as well. Nothing that it doesn't have to be explicit. Like you can see the way that certain houses have been left and you get a little bit of story, or you might, as you said, sort of do a bit of exploration of the world and you can find these little notes that give you these little snippets of what's happened. I remember I walked into a house and there was a kid had written a note to Santa saying, can you get me a dog because it will help me make my dad feel safer. So that we can protect from the monsters that are outside. And, you know, you, in the context of everything you know, there's these little moments, which is just a tiny little bit of extra story of sort of that human experience within this world. And that person, you don't know what has happened to them, where they are down the track, but you get this little snapshot of their life.
One thing I really love, actually, just on that note, is Ellie will say stuff contextually that really makes you feel like, okay, she's actually existing in the world, because it kind of bridges that gap between us, the player, and the characters in the world. Because, for example, sometimes you have somebody following you or whatever as part of the story. And if you decide to go off the beaten path, they'll actually say something like, oh, okay, I'll give you 5 minutes then. And they'll just wait outside. And it's stuff like that that makes me feel like us as the player, everything that we do makes sense for Ellie to do as well in the world. And so when she does pick up notes, and she's reading it, and there's one a little bit later on in the story where there's a bunch of notes that tell a story in this neighborhood about what this particular person was going through. And when you find the last note that kind of wraps up the story, Ellie will say something like, oh, Jesus, and like comment on the fact that she, as us, the player, discovering this for the very first time. And I love that kind of stuff, the environmental storytelling.
What are some of the moments that have really stuck out to you when playing this game? We've heard a lot about in the reviews that there are some pretty full-on, emotionally difficult challenges in this game. But what really stuck out to you, something that you're going to remember for years to come?
Oh, I think, the emotional stuff for sure. Because even in the first game, I got teary like a bunch of times throughout the story, just because of how powerful the storytelling was, and especially credit to all of the actors and stuff that are in it and actually, you know, doing the motion capture for the characters. In this game, it is very emotionally heavy. It's very dark as well. Like the story is a lot more darker than the first one. And Ellie's quest for vengeance has taken her on like a really, really difficult path. And I think for me, it's just the way that I'm feeling when I'm playing the game, because it's a very, it's very strange when you go from literally crying in a particular part in the game or whatever, to maybe an hour later, and it's a really beautiful, poignant moment where people are just looking out at the vista and talking about life or something like that. And so I think it has a lot of different, it's very nuanced. It's a very nuanced game, and it has a lot of different moments that stand out to me in particular, honestly. Just, I don't know. There's one point where you can play a guitar. Like, Ellie walks into a music shop, and there's a guitar there, and she picks it up, and she starts singing "Take on Me" by Aha. And that sort of going through fighting clickers and bandits and stuff, and she still finds this little moment for rest and to reflect on things and to sing and still generally be, I guess, human, right? In this really what would otherwise be dire circumstances, really speaks to me on that, because it's still showing that no matter how hard things get, no matter how dire situations can be, there's always room for beauty.
Who would you recommend this game for? Do you think you could come into this without the context of the first game? Who would enjoy this game?
Oh, I wouldn't recommend it. Like, if you haven't played the first game, or at least if you don't know the story of the first game, a lot of the stuff I feel like that would enrich your experience with this would be lost in you. A lot of information in the game that is kind of contingent on your understanding of the world already, it kind of reintroduces you to the world, but it doesn't go into why this happened or what's going on or who's this character or why does this person have a particular relationship with this other person. There's a lot of stuff there that is maybe because I my sister's boyfriend right now, like, has been watching a little bit here and there, and he doesn't know anything about the first game, and there's a lot of small things that I pick up on that he just doesn't understand. But if you don't do the story, I would say, as far as gameplay wise go, if you're really interested in story driven games, and especially post-apocalyptic semi-open games, it's not fully open world, but it is much more open than the first one. And so if you like exploring and doing that kind of stuff and just existing within a world, I would say definitely give The Last of Us 2 a shot.
And you said that there's a couple of really interesting, speaking of those little bits and pieces that you can pick up if you've got the context, that there's some nice Easter eggs in there that people can discover.
Yeah, for sure, actually. So in this game, there's like collectibles and stuff, and they come in the form of either comic books or trading cards and all that kind of thing. And one that I found that I thought was quite clever was this villain character named Dr. Uckman. And if you know the director of The Last of Us, his name is Neil Druckmann, Dr. Uckman. And so, like, they drew him as like an evil villain, and on the back there's a little bit of backstory and that sort of thing. So I really like and appreciate those small Easter eggs for fans that know more about, say, the development or whatever. Even at the beginning, as Ellie and you're walking through this town, there's a gentleman playing a banjo sitting down. And as soon as I saw him, I recognized this is the music composer for the game. And because I've seen on YouTube a bunch of clips performing the score live, and they've actually modeled him and put him in the game. So it's like small stuff like that, which I think is pretty cool.
It's definitely very, very cool. This is one that is going to be a heavier game. So maybe it's one to think about if you want to play this game. Maybe do a bit of a research for you, because there's some moments in there that I know that some people have found quite difficult to play. So it might be one, if you played the last game, or you're not maybe in the right headspace to play this fully, just have a bit of a research before you jump into it. But by all measures, it's supposed to be quite an experience and to play it. It's out now on the PlayStation 4 if you want to check it out.
This is Mainstream by Pixel Sift.
So, Gianni, you've been playing No Straight Roads, and going a little bit away from The Last of Us into something that's very bright and colourful and musical, what is No Straight Roads?
Yeah, so No Straight Roads is a game developed by a Malaysian studio called Metronomic, where you basically are one of the last rockers in the world. You're a fan of rock and roll. You play as May, and you are basically trying to fight out against the trend of electronic dance music, or EDM. And EDM has basically taken over this city called Vinyl City, and every part of the world is controlled by that. And May hopes for a world where indie rock and rock and roll can be have an equal footing in this sort of fantasy world. It's a game that is a sort of a, it's an action game with a rhythm element in it.
How much rhythm is in the game? So like we can go all the way to Guitar Hero, which is obviously all rhythm. Is it that far, or is it just a little bit before?
No, it is not. It's not completely all the way to that. So there's elements where you need to use the rhythm. For example, each of the districts of Vinyl City are controlled by a different boss. And, you know, the bosses, you know, like DJ Subatomic Supernova. And there's another character called Sayu, which is kind of quite obviously a virtual pop idol. So a Hatsune Miku sort of style character. and the boss fights that you have, they will move to a rhythm. There'll be a music and soundtrack to it, and you can kind of plan what you're doing in the game based on that rhythm. And you, if you don't follow the rhythm, then you're very likely to get badly hurt. And the way that the boss battles work out, you kind of this sort of open world experience as well, where you move between the different districts. But when you get into the boss area, there's usually like a little initial area that you need to kind of move through before you get to the boss fight. So sort of a staging area. And that's very rhythm-based as well. Like, there'll be moving platforms that go along to the beat, so you need to make sure you jump onto those platforms at the right time, or walls will open and close, or there'll be lasers that are shot at you at certain beats, and you have to be able to dodge or reflect them back. And so what happens with that is that you need to be able to make sure that you hit the beats at the right moment, because that'll give you the best opportunity to survive. Because health in this game is not auto... you don't auto-regenerate at all. It's sort of pickup-based, and the biggest thing about playing this game is you want to be able to make sure that you have the best position to be in by the time you face the boss, because usually in the boss fights there are sort of limited abilities for you, limited opportunities for you to recover your health. So by listening to the beat, by following the way that the game is played, and sort of going along with the music that's in it, then you kind of have the best opportunity to defeat the boss. Now, I wouldn't say that the gameplay is actually particularly tricky. There's only sort of a limited number of things you can do. You can sort of jump, you can attack, you can fire a sort of a musical blast, sort of a ranged attack as well. But you need to kind of combine all of those together with special attacks, and there's upgrades that you can put onto your guitar or onto your drumsticks to sort of give you sort of limited time bonuses or further attacks as well.
And I'm guessing with all the different districts and stuff, it has a unique flavor, right? And each of the bosses are slightly different to one another. Is that accurate?
Well, the ones that we I've sort of experienced so far, they are very so like DJ Subatomic Supernova has you know, very space aesthetic, and when you're fighting him, he basically almost has like a black hole for a face. It's kind of hard to describe.
Cool.
He's got like a hoodie over the top with headphones, and then he's got an orb for a face that is like a black hole, and he's like this giant robot looking dude. But when you fight him in space, there's all these like asteroid fields, there's planets that you are moving sort of orbits around the boss in a sort of central area, and you need to kind of attack those planets to build up enough ammo effectively to shoot your ranged attack at the boss who's sitting in the middle, because you can't directly attack him. But when you go into the Sayu world, which is the virtual idol, who is a very cute kawaii style a mermaid character, a digital mermaid, all of her world is almost like a bit like a, how would you, what's to describe? It's almost like a synth waves world with lots of crazy elements all laid over the top of, you know, like a very ocean aesthetic as well. So very beach punk, that sort of style. So it kind of all meshes together really, really nicely in these sort of overarching worlds. And the characters are really quite funny. And I think the style of it as well has a really interesting sense of humor as well. There's a lot of the sort of jokes in it based on people who obviously had experience with playing, with being in bands and all of that sort of thing, and then seeing and kind of seeing these electronic artists kind of take over the world and sort of hoping for something that had gone past. It's very sort of almost like 90s grunge aesthetic on one end, and then very like clean and shiny and neon lights on the other end. So
just a big clash of two musical genres, and you know, with indie rock and punk and all that sort of stuff, the whole premise of it is, you know, sticking it to the man, right? And so with EDM and, you know, corporate and all that kind of stuff, there's a lot of great opportunities for contrast as far as gameplay and styles, as you just mentioned. And is there anything that stood out to you, any moments in the game where you were playing that you thought were particularly funny or that sort of thing?
Yeah, I really liked it. And it, for me, it felt like I had like quite an interesting sort of, it's made by a Malaysian developer, and it sort of felt like I got a glimpse into what a Malaysian sense of humor is like, because it is a lot of sort of over the top moments, and it, I could see it sort of being pitched at a game that a lot of like kids would enjoy as well. But there's some, it just the characterization, it also really strongly draws from Japanese games as well. You can sort of see the anime style in it as well. But as it's right in that they kind of, yeah, it's that you kind of hit the nail on the head there. There is that sort of punk aesthetic fighting the man, where it's like the shiny world of EDM is coming up against the grungy homemade basement you know, aesthetic, where you actually live in the sewers as part of your home base, and you've got like one of the areas I think about a bit like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it's almost that sort of 90s era as well. You have a room which is an underground gig, and you have all these people in your underground gig area, which that gives you the upgrades, so you sort of build up your experience there. So yeah, it's really, really funny, and it's really cool way to put together. And because there is sort of like an open world element to it, they do that really great thing where you can see, like in games like Mario or wherever, where you can see the abilities you will unlock down the track, because there's little things that are just hidden just out of, you can see them but you can't get to them yet. You need to unlock the double jump in order to get over to those areas. So
right, so it's kind of Metroidvania-esque in that sort of regard, right?
Yeah, in a 3D sort of world, rather than sort of side-scrolling. So yeah, it is. You basically, exactly right. You find those elements and you upgrade them as you defeat different bosses. You'll unlock different abilities to be able to play, to explore the world in a better way. And it's sort of an opportunity to come back.
And if somebody is, like, say, not into either indie rock or EDM, do you think they could still enjoy the game?
I think so, yeah. It's just, I mean, the music in it's really good, both on the EDM side and on the rock side as well. Yeah, I think it's just kind of like a fun, colorful, sort of very over the top action game where you could experience it. It's not a very complex storyline. I think if you're people of all ages should be able to enjoy it. And it's just, there's opportunities in it for you to replay levels as well, so you can sort of ratchet up the difficulty and make sure you get your timings 100% right. So if you're one of those real score attack sort of players, you'll be able to experience that. Or if you just want to play through for the storyline and sort of get through to this sort of cool and quirky world, then you can play that as well. It's also, aesthetic wise, it kind of reminds me a lot of Splatoon 2 in a way. I don't know why. It's not exactly the same, but it's sort of grungy city feel. It gives me that same, or the Splatoon world. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's got a lot of bright colors and kind of in your face and very loud. I like to think of it that way. Mm. And I also heard that there was a couch co-op too. So have you played it multiplayer, or have you just played it solo?
I've just played it solo. But yeah, there is two characters that you kind of switch between at all times. And part of the strategy of playing it in a single player experience is you basically sort of juggle between the two characters. You're kind of switching to go through. They've got different abilities. They're better suited for certain enemy situations, and as you sort of switch out of your characters, you can unlock an upgrade which does let you sort of passively regenerate the health of the other character. So the idea is that you're kind of always switching between the two, but if you played in a co-op experience, you'd obviously be playing as the two characters together, where you'd sort of have an two minds working together, so that sort of balances out there. So yeah, it's it's definitely kind of fun, and I reckon if you've got a friend and you want to play it on the PlayStation or play it on PC when it comes out, you'll really and sort of enjoy this experience. It doesn't ask a lot of you. I think it's a fun thing. Maybe it's exactly the perfect thing you should be playing after you play a really emotionally heavy game like Last of Us, if you just need a bit of a bit of a break. It's got a really cool style, and it's great to see. I mean, some high profile names attached to it as well. Juan Hasma, who's the lead game designer of Final Fantasy 15. Is part of it, who basically put this game studio together in Malaysia called Metronomic in 2017.
That's No Straight Roads. It's by Metronomic. Thanks to Five Star Games and Metronomic for providing us a preview code of this game. By the time you listen to this, there will be a demo available on the Epic Games Store, so you can go and play that and check it out. And the game will be releasing a little bit later on. It's been delayed slightly to the 25th of August for the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. And it will come to Nintendo Switch as well a little bit later on down the track.
Sit down for a chat with your pals in video games. This is Mainstream by Pixel Sift.
Well, that's it for Mainstream for this episode. It's by Pixel Sift. It's what video games Pixel Sift team have been playing and what they've been enjoying over the last couple of weeks. My name is Gianni, and thanks to Daniel for being part of episode 15.
Thanks for having me, G.
That's also a big thanks to Brian Fairbanks from Salty Dog Sounds for composing the Mainstream theme music. And now, Daniel, if people want to find out your very good artworks that you've been posting on social media, where can they find you on Twitter and online?
Ah, thank you. I'm on Twitter at Daniel Ang Art. Same thing for Instagram.
You should definitely check out Daniel's work. And you might know that Daniel is the one who created the Mainstream album cover art or the podcast art. If you're looking at that in your podcast player, that's Daniel's handiwork. You can find me on Twitter. I am at @G_DI_G. And while you're online, give Pixel Sift a follow as well on social media. That's at Pixel Sift on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Just give it a search. We post a bunch of things online all the time. We share great work we see, and we show you stories and articles and much, much more. We've also got another podcast. It's just called Pixel Sift. So if you search for that in your podcast player on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever you like to listen on, you'll find us there. It's an Australian podcast award-winning show, and we talk to video game developers to find out what it takes to make the games that you enjoy, and we get a bit of that experience of what it's like along that journey. If you are curious about what it actually takes to put a game together.
And we've also got heaps more for you to check out on our website, so be sure to head on over to pixelsift.com.au for videos, articles, and much more. That's pixelsift.com.au. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a mate who you would think would like it too? So please tell them, and you can find us on any podcast player of your choice.
That's it for Mainstream. Until next time, have fun.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.